numbers are all over the news, from polling and political campaigns to ever more elaborate sports statistics to rates of COVID tests and vaccinations. If we're not mathematically inclined, it can be easy to gloss over the numbers, neither accept them at face value or to be skeptical, since it can seem like we can do anything with statistics. But our next guest says we're missing out if we skip the data, and he's got a new podcast that can help us out. Spoiler, he starts with ghosts. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you ever feel baffled when you run into that string of numbers and data and charts in a news story or a sports story? Or do you love that stuff? You can't get enough of it. Either way, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Harry Enten is back with us. He's a senior data reporter at CNN. He's got a new podcast out. It's called Margins of Error. Harry, welcome back to Central Time.
I feel like I'm joining old family. How you doing, buddy?
Great. It's good to have you back. And you're doing well. You got this new podcast.
We do have this new podcast, Margins of Error, which you mentioned. And, you know, the truth is that over the last, you know, year and a half, we've been dealing with so many hard news stories in which numbers have been applied. And I wanted to branch out a little bit and show that the numbers can tell us a lot more about the world around us beyond just the hard news like COVID or the presidential election.
Well, Harry, I've known all along you're a data superhero, but I never knew your origin story. When did you first fall in love with numbers and the stories that they tell?
You know, it's a great question insofar as I think there are multiple different stages in which I fell in love, right? You know, obviously, I went into the voting booth with my father when I was 4 years old, and I loved the idea of pulling the levers on the lever machines, and that was all fun and jazz. But as I got older, you know, I must admit, I struggled a lot in school when it came to essay writing. And I just couldn't, you know, themes, motifs, that type of thing was all very, very difficult for me. And what I discovered was I could, in fact, make really good arguments through numbers, prove things through numbers. You know, in a world in which there are a lot of, you know, a lot of misinformation and falsehoods, numbers can cut right through it. And I'm able to build an argument through numbers and tell a lot about the world surrounding us through those numbers.
Before we get into the podcast more deeply, Harry, I think people can be suspicious that you can make the numbers do what you want with them, and you can tell whatever story you want with the numbers. How can we, the lay people, as we're looking at a data-driven story, kind of try to figure out for ourselves, am I being flim-flammed here, or is this legit stuff?
You know, I guess you can always be flim-flam, but my general advice on whether or not you should trust the numbers, you know, is probably the same advice I would give with news stories in general, right? If you're hearing these numbers from a source you've never heard about before, a person who you've never heard of, who's not with a news organization you trust, then I would be a little bit suspicious. If it's from a reporter that you trust, from a news organization that you trust, and there seems to be, you know, not just one number, but perhaps a slew of numbers so that they can tell a complete story, so it's not just an outlier statistic, I think that to me is what I generally look for. And the other thing, you know, I would say just on polling in general is always, an average is better than any individual poll, and an average of data points in real life is better than one individual anecdote.
Harry Enten is with us, senior data reporter at CNN. We're talking about his new podcast, Margins of Error, where he digs into numbers behind stories and helps us make sense of it all. You can join in if you have a question about how to interpret the numbers you might see out in the world. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Want to dig into your podcast, Harry. And this is an important point. Before we give a listen to something, you know, I think of you as a political guy, right? And kind of a sports guy, too. You are not just looking at politics here. Why was it important to you to branch out from that?
Yeah, in fact, we only have one story the entire season in which it's strictly a political story. 7 of the 8 episodes are not about politics. And, you know, the reason to me it was so important was that I think life is a lot more than just politics. It's a lot more than just the coronavirus. There are a lot of stories out there, and I wanted my work to reflect that. And I believe that the podcast does exactly that, including in the clip that you'll be playing.
Well, you said life isn't just about that politics, and also the afterlife isn't just about politics. Your first episode is about ghosts, and here's a listen to your setup on that.
There's a belief that there was a ghost boy, a boy who was killed by a passing car. And the belief is that if I throw coins into the body of water below, that the ghost boy will throw the coins back at me. Shall we do it? Let's do it. That's one coin. It's two coins. That's two coins that I've just thrown in there. And you know what? I'm a believer in luck, so let's toss a third coin for good luck and see if the coins come back.
Well, I won't spoil it and say whether or not Ghost Boy threw those coins back at you, Harry, but why did you tackle ghosts in your first episode?
First, let me just say, that was the freakiest drive I ever took. It's West Milford, New Jersey. You know, I live in New York. I had to drive all the way out there on this dark road. And at some point, there were a bunch of high schoolers who came out. And I was like, what is going on here? And this light was coming out of the forest. You know, look, to me, what it was, I actually had a producer. It came with an interesting stat. And he said, you know that nearly 50% of Americans believe in ghosts now? And I said, there's no way that's true. And I actually looked it up, and it turns out it's true. And not only that, but the percentage of Americans who believe in ghosts has climbed exponentially since the late 70s, when it was only about 10%. So we've seen nearly a 40-point increase. And I was just interested in this episode is, why has there been this increase in the percentage of Americans who believe in ghosts? And, you know, I think this episode, which was the first one we did, sort of speaks to what the pod is about. That is that the numbers are a way in, but they are not the entire story. You know, in each episode, we do a bunch of interviews. We speak with the people who are experiencing what the numbers suggest are going on. And so in that episode, you know, we speak with someone who believes in ghosts. We speak with some experts who help us to understand why ghost belief is up. But, you know, it really, as you listen to the episode, and I hope your listeners will, the fact that ghost belief is up speaks to a number of trends that we're seeing throughout society. So, the percentage who believe in ghosts is just the way into a larger story.
What is it about a number like that, that the percentage of people who believe in ghosts has just had that huge jump? What is it that makes you sit up and say, take notice and say, this means something, and we have to figure out what?
You know, it passes, first off, it's sort of the gut test, which is this number seem sort of interesting and different than what I might expect? And the fact that nearly 50% of Americans now say they believe in ghosts was something that made me sit up and say, wow, that's much higher than I expected. And then essentially what happens is, you know, I go into research mode, right? I look back, I try and see, okay, is that number higher or lower? Okay, it's much higher than it used to be. What are some trends that are going on in society that may help explain that? You know, each of the episodes, even though they're, you know, about 30 minutes in runtime, including commercials, even though it's that short of a period of time, so you really can get a lot in a small period of time, it takes a lot of time to produce these episodes. And what you're really getting is sort of the meat. You don't have to worry about your vegetables. You're getting your ice cream sundae. You're getting your steak in the episode. And we really figure out what's really driving these numbers. And so there's a lot of work that goes into it. You know, it was very possible when we first heard that stat, the story might have not gone anywhere. But the fact was, there's in fact a lot to the story, and you get to hear that in the first episode.
Right, something that might leap to people's minds is, well, can we trust the polls there? Was there something about the way we asked about ghosts in, I don't know, 1970 different than we ask about them now? Or are different agencies doing? Has something changed in our measurement, not in our reality? How do we tease out, whether we're talking about ghosts or support for a political candidate or whatever, how do we tease that out?
You know, I must admit, when I was looking at it, I sort of said, okay, the first poll in 1978 was conducted by Gallup. And, you know, it's obviously a prominent pollster. For a long time, they interviewed face-to-face, then they interviewed by phone. And now a lot of the polls that ask about ghost belief are ones essentially in which they're being asked online. And so, yes, the way in which the questions are being asked is different. The methodology is a little bit different. The questions themselves, sometimes they're asked in some way, sometimes they're asked in others. And so in that type of situation, what I did was I literally gathered every single question I could on it in the Roper Archives, which is a large archive of polling, both politics and non-politics, going back since the late 1930s. And I said, okay, am I just seeing an outlier data point here, or is there something real going on? And what you can literally see, if you were to chart it out, you can see that the line increases in a very clear 45-degree angle. And that is that the increase is clear across time. And so it became clear to me that this wasn't just an artifact of the question, the way the question was being asked, wasn't just an artifact of the methodology. But, you know, when you're looking at all these types of things, what I always suggest is that you try and look at all the polls that are available. You average at the end of the day, but you keep in mind that the average isn't always going to be perfect. You really should look at the range of polls so that if, let's say, one poll has a candidate down one and another one has that candidate up 10, the truth is probably in between. That candidate's probably up by, you know, 5 or 6 points, but it's quite conceivable that person, that candidate is actually trailing.
We're talking to CNN senior data reporter Harry Enten about his new podcast about statistics and numbers in our lives, not just about politics either. It's called Margins of Error. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Coming up, we talked about ghosts. How about daylight savings time? Do you believe in that? Do you want it to stay or go? That's the next episode we'll take a look at. And bigger picture, do you have a question about polls and numbers in our lives and how to assess them when we see them in a news story? Are you a big fan of digging into the statistics of political polling, professional sports, you name it? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk now with CNN senior data reporter Harry Enten. His new podcast is called Margins of Error. Tackles a lot of different numbers in the news and beyond and how we interpret them. You can join in if you have a question or thought at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Harry, we heard from Tom in Milwaukee, who is interested in numbers and data behind a big topic, COVID-19 deaths. He's interested in seeing the breakdown of Republicans versus Democrats, how that fits into the bigger picture where we just hear that politics is often wrapped up in whether or not people get vaccinated. A lot of charts and numbers going on out there about that, Harry. I don't know how close you followed it since you're busy making a podcast. But what thoughts do you have for Tom?
These are the thoughts that I would have. First off, obviously, we know that more Democrats have gotten vaccinated than Republicans. Obviously, at the beginning of the pandemic, what we saw were deaths largely in blue states, states like New Jersey and New York. Since that point, especially over the last few months, what we've generally seen is that, number one, the red states have tended to have higher death tolls more recently than the blue states did. And even within a particular state, what you tend to be seeing is that the counties that voted more heavily for Trump have had higher death rates than the counties that voted for Biden. I believe that's also true in Wisconsin, which, of course, shouldn't be surprising insofar as that the vaccination rates tend to be higher in those blue counties than in those red counties. When it comes to individuals, obviously, that's a bit tougher. You know, it doesn't say on the death certificate whether a person was a Democrat or a Republican. But I would say that if at the beginning of the pandemic, the deaths tended to be concentrated among places that voted Democratic, at this particular point, the deaths, at least the more recent deaths, tend to be concentrated among the counties and places that vote more Republican.
Tom, thanks for passing that question along at 800-642-1234. Okay, Harry, you took us on your ghost tour there. Now you dug into our clocks. Let's take a listen to I believe this is the second chapter of Margins of Error.
How do you feel about daylight saving time and or the changing of the clocks?
A lot of times during falling back, people break their clocks because they go the wrong way or they are fiddling with it and then something goes wrong. So we do get a little bump in business on daylight, you know, saving and standard time when they switch back and forward.
That's Sebastian Laws, owner and horologist at the Southern Clock Shop. At any one time, the guy is surrounded by 300 to 500 clocks in various stages of repair. I figured if anyone has the right to complain about changing the clocks, it's him.
All right, Harry, what was the core question that led you to tackle daylight savings time?
And I should note, it's saving.
Oh, my goodness.
It's not a plural. You're saving time. You're not saving time.
Central time's over. That's it.
It's all over. The fact checks are in. That's, in fact, one of the myths we bust in the episode. There are a lot of myths around daylight saving time that we bust, including that, including the fact that it's for farmers, The fact that Ben Franklin was the main inventor of it, all those tend to be false upon closer examination. Look, the deal for me was actually really simple. I love sleep and I don't get enough of it. And a few months ago, essentially, I got woken up. I was in bed and I was like, darn, it's later than I wish it were. And I realized that if it were not for daylight saving time, the clocks would have been an hour, you know, it would have been an hour earlier. And so this has long been an issue for me in terms of trying to understand why the heck do we have this system whereby in the fall you fall back and in the spring you spring forward. And this whole episode is sort of looking at why does a system exist in which 70% of Americans do not like the idea that we change the clocks twice a year. And so we really just dig deep into it and try to understand whether or not it's the right system for us. And if it isn't, what direction should we be going in?
Is there any thought that we're going to get rid of spring forward, fall back, Harry?
Well, there has been some legislation in the United States Senate that actually wants to move us towards permanent daylight saving time. That is, we would never change the clocks. We would not fall back in the winter time, the fall time. Whether or not that goes anywhere, ultimately, who is to say? At this particular point, the law actually allows you to stay on standard time all year round, which much of Arizona and the state of Hawaii do, but it does not allow you to be on daylight saving time all year round. Whether or not we actually end up getting to that point, who is to really say? But I will say, if you listen to the episode, you'll find that there are a lot of people who feel very strongly about this issue.
Talking to Harry Enten from CNN. His new podcast is called Margins of Error. Let's go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Catherine is with us in Madison. Catherine, hi.
Hi. First of all, I have to say I'm dying to listen to the podcast about the ghosts. Fascinating. I'm calling because my question is this. Whenever confronted with a poll of the sort that says, do you approve or disapprove of such and such, or, you know, other kind of binary choices, I just won't answer them because I can't, because my feelings on those complex subjects cannot be summarized in either yes or no. And I just wondered how that sort of those, you know, there's a place for forced choice in some kinds of tests, but in others, I feel as though that must distort the results to some extent. And I would love to hear Mr. Enten's comment on that issue.
Catherine, great question. I think people often might wonder, why do you do a yes or no, approve or disapprove, versus a range from strongly approve to strongly disapprove?
It's a great question, and I appreciate being called Mr. My God. I feel so grown up today. What I would say to this is a fewfold. Number one, there are some questions, right, in which you ask, you know, a strongly approve, somewhat approve, somewhat disapprove, strongly disapprove. Those may mostly have to do with, do you approve of a politician or not? I actually tend to like questions that leave open the possibility, number one, where it's very clearly stated that you can say, I don't know. And I also like questions in which, especially non-political questions, where you can sort of give a range of your positivity or negativity. You know, there was an old CBS News, when they asked about the favorability ratings, they'd say, do you have a favorable rating, unfavorable rating? You don't know enough to rate, or you've never heard of this person. I like that. When it comes to, you know, differing questions about, you know, would something make you more or less likely to get a COVID-19 vaccine among the unvaccinated? You know, you could say it will make me more likely, it'll make me somewhat more likely, it won't make a difference, it'll make me somewhat less likely or a lot less likely. I think, though, on the overall thing, when it comes to approving or disapproving of a politician, you know, especially the president of the United States, I think that that dual question, approve, disapprove, gets you a lot of the way there. But when it comes to particular questions that I don't think a lot of people have given that much time to, I think that's when it's time to break out sort of not just the dual binary choice of approve, disapprove, but introducing the don't know, introducing the idea that you might be neutral, and also introducing the idea of a scale so that you can essentially say, you know what, I like that, but I don't necessarily love that.
Thanks for that call, Catherine. Let's go now to Jeff in Superior. Jeff, hey.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Say, you know, we live in a beautiful part of the world, and the way to enjoy it, in my opinion, is to somehow escape from the day-to-day things where everything's being measured and everything's being, you know, sold or bought. And my family, my extended family, my grandmother had a cabin. We would go, there was no clock, there was no phone. And when you went there, you were, you know, sunrise to sunset, you ate when you're hungry and you slept when you were tired. And it was a way to get away from the world. And she really taught us something that was lasting. And I wondered if you, what you thought about that. I wanted to share that with you.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Timelessness, Harry, it sounds lovely to me as a human. It sounds scary to me as a radio guy. I don't know. What do you think, having talked about time for a while? Do you think you could appreciate some time without a clock?
Oh, God, I would love time without a clock. I'd absolutely love that idea of being able to unplug. I will admit, as I sit here, you know, on 34th Street in Manhattan or 33rd Street in Manhattan, the idea of being able to unplug sounds very appealing, also very difficult. But, you know, I don't want to make this, you know, bring it back to the podcast completely,
well,
but
should.
I will say, you know, when it comes to the podcast and why I wanted to do what I did, it was because I really did want an escape from the day-to-day grind of the hard news cycle. There's a time and a place for that, but I really wanted to be able to go on an adventure with the listeners and be able to explore things that make up the rest of life. Because again, the hard news stories, again, are important, but they make up just a small fraction of our life. And being able to go and tell the story of going up on a, you know, a road in the middle of nowhere, New Jersey, I think that kind of gets at the idea that there's a lot more to life that oftentimes doesn't get spoken about in the media.
We'll leave it there, Harry. Thanks again. Good to talk to you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
Harry Enten is a senior data reporter at CNN. We talked to him today about his new podcast he's hosting, looking at some of the stories behind facts, figures, and statistics. It's called Margins of Error, two episodes up so far, Ghosts and Time.